This is Cliff Central.
Hey, hey, hey. You are listening to Students Uncensored with Ruby Chukwuri. today's topic is navigating black girl identity and talking about black girl magic. So yes. Joining me in studio today is the wonderful Zanele Zimu.
Hello, 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 everybody, hello.
So we have three regulars and one newbie. We have Chioma Umela.
Hey.
We have Babalwa Manyi.
Was good.
And Apiwa, I will let you introduce yourself.
My name is Apiwa Klau. Shall I say I study in
UCT? Yeah, where do you study? How old are you?
I am 21 years old. And yeah, I'm happy to join you guys.
Okay, thank you. I think everyone in studio today is 21.
Yeah.
What's good?
I'm 17, so thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
We don't need underage people yet. Okay, so this is my last podcast of like this holiday season. So because, you know, back to school, back to reality, unfortunately. But I'm very happy that January is ending.
Because I've been there.
I've like 90 days of January.
Like, next week is still January. Why is that?
Why does the torture not end?
Like, no money, and your parents are stressed because now they're needing to send you back to school. Mm. And it's like, why are they looking at you like, why are you so expensive?
Literally,
I was told that. Like, my mom was like, you're such an expensive child. I was like, what?
And you know how they don't care
about
you?
Using the Wi-Fi. I was like, okay.
Okay. Do you know how they don't care about you once you leave, like, school? Mm. Like, when once you're in university, they're like, okay. Like, that's
You're on
it.
Your own.
Yeah, you're on your own, mm-hmm. literally.
No, you're fending for yourself, then. Okay, so the reason I wanted to discuss this topic is because I know, like, during the year, there's a lot of, like, different things that happen where we're like, hashtag black girl magic, or, you know, these people are shining, or whatever it may be. But I think a lot of the time we might not really speak about black girl identity and mm-hmm. how it is navigating spaces that aren't exactly made for us yeah. or comfortable for us. And I know that, I mean, I can only speak for myself personally, that when you're a black girl who's always been in majority white spaces or very mm-hmm. private institutions, whether yeah. it be educationally or socially, it's a totally different type of navigating the space.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? So I know, if I'm not mistaken, most of us are from, you know, kind of private schools, majority white backgrounds, that kind of a vibe. So I think that's definitely a conversation that needs to be had, because I don't know if it's just me, but when people are discussing black identity, I often feel like I'm not the, I don't know, like the status quo
yeah.
It's
a trend. Black. It's a fashion trend.
Yeah. Or sometimes you feel like your voice isn't really welcome because you haven't come from a certain type of background.
That's true.
As if you aren't like a black that should be speaking yeah. in that conversation.
And don't you feel like you become more aware of certain situations that didn't like necessarily bother you in high school? Once you get out of there, you are your eyes are like a lot
wide
more open.
Definitely.
And you're like, okay, well, that was wrong back then, but like, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things, like becoming aware of your blackness, like once you actually get out of high school. And it's like, why are black kids in majority white spaces not in like communities where they are taught to be aware of like their blackness, and like they don't
That's
realize
true.
Certain things that are wrong at the time? They'll only realize them once they get out of them. So we mm-hmm. tolerate a lot because we just actually just don't know.
But you know yeah. what it is also, like, it sounds almost like painful to say or like hear, but like assimilating helps. It does. Like in the private schools, like you look back and you're like, yeah, like that was sucky and stuff, but you realize how like easy it is to just kind of put your head down and kind of just assimilate. And I'm not saying that's, I feel like that's just why we were so non-woke in high school, because it was just easier to kind of accept it.
Yeah,
and now
true.
That we have the freedom outside, we're allowed to kind of, you know, breathe and be like, this mm-hmm. is not right. But in the space, you kind of have to just get by. Like
yeah,
in high school, you
true.
Can't be fighting political battles.
That's
you
true.
Know?
And,
yeah.
and being, being
Sorry. Yeah. We got the juice. Yeah.
And the thing is, when you come back from varsity, I think the first thing my parents said was like, oh, so that Santon accent is not there anymore, hey? What happened? And it's like, yo, I did not realize
exactly.
like
that you even had an accent.
Yeah.
Same.
It's hectic.
So, okay. So I wanted to start off with a bit of an exercise. Okay.
All right.
I'm the teacher. You know, I'm joking. Okay. So just for everyone to finish off the sentence, being a black female in a private school is?
Sure.
Zani?
I think suffocating.
Okay.
Yeah. Should I explain why?
Yes.
Because like you're trying to find out who you are as a black person, but you're surrounded by white people. How are you how are you supposed to find yourself in a white environment? Especially because they have their own beliefs. They believe that, example, like maybe, acting black isn't a problem. So obviously you don't see the things they do. Do you get what I'm saying?
Like blackface-ish kind of thing.
Yes, but yes. Acting. I just didn't want to say it because, you know, yeah. I'm not trying to be like last week.
It's unsensitive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Like, it's just the environment you're in. You, at every single break, you're with a white girl. Obviously, you're going to identify yourself as white. At home, you watch TV, movies, the parent track. Trap, for example, had no black people in that movie. Titanic, no black person. And we're busy here crying, oh my God. No. And then who do I identify ourselves with? White people. So it's very hard, like, to get out of that whole thing of feeling not white and becoming, and realizing that you are this black girl and that you are important and you are beautiful and you shouldn't be insecure for being black.
True.
So would you say it's the institutions that make you feel suffocated or the people that you are surrounded by?
Institutions, people, movies, the world.
Okay.
Literally.
It's not only the students, because we have to also think about, okay, those people are also our age. They're also learning. This is their territory. Mm. But it's just like also institutions, they don't make us feel welcome. We have to fit into their space. Mm-hmm. So obviously when we fit into their space, we start feeling like them. We start wanting acting. To be like them. Mm. We start acting like them. So yeah, it's just like suffocating, because then also you're not who you really are. You're not embracing your hair, your identity, your skin color. Yeah.
Okay. And Chioma?
I'd say disloyal to ourselves, to our race. And it's not like on purpose, but it's like the whole thing of, like wanting to, like the whole thing of like, I know in our grade we had the black girl crew, right? Mm. And that's what we were called.
So many literally. Schools had that.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yep. Every school.
And shout out.
Hey, black girls.
And there was this one, and we were like, we were the black girls, sure. And we, you know, we did win deck, and you know, we twerked a little Whoa. Bit, but like we weren't like, but we weren't like putting it in.
The ones who were always supposed to be in the dance crew. Whenever yeah. there was a yes. dance, we're yes. like a school assembly.
Like, yes, oh, we're exactly. the black but we were never like black. And I'm saying that like in a very like, you know.
It was Sorry. Just like that little thing.
Yeah,
that,
like we at break, but anyways, but we had. So the disloyalty came not only to your, because I nearly touched on the self, like disloyalty, and that's what I mean by disloyal. Yeah. Like you're not true to yourself. You're like, but it's like there was this, another girl and in our school, and I'm just gonna name her by Ashley, and she was more black inverted commas mm-hmm. okay. than the rest of us, and you could tell it was like why, like not like, and it was never overt. Like in private schools, also that's the thing, it's never overt, subtle. It's subtle. Yeah. But even in your heart, you could just see her saying, you could just hear yourself saying, why is she like that, or oh, if only she did this, or if only she assimilated, and we weren't saying it in so many words, but that's what we were thinking. We're thinking, why don't you assimilate? So it's like it's so much disloyalty, because like you're trying so hard to impress boys who are telling you they don't like black girls, or you're pretty for a black girl, and you're trying so hard to impress that. Girls
Ooh, who are
who, you're trying to impress girls who, when they talk to their white friends, they're all fine, but when they talk to you, like it's very patronizing, it's very pet, it's very patting the head, and it's, so it's like it's so disloyal. That's what I'd say. It's just not, it's not true to ourselves. It's untruthful.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, Babs.
I would say it's almost like a competition with the white girl. Like for me, it started from grade 2. That's when I moved to a white primary school to high school, And it was kind of like, okay, cool. What has she got that I don't have? Kind of situation. Yes. For some reason, it's like, okay, cool. BlackBerry Curve came out. I need a BlackBerry Curve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it will happen. Like, okay, so what do you guys do on weekends? I visit my grand. Yeah, my grand's in Bryanston. Where your grand at? Like
she's in the hood.
Listen. She's that's right. In the hood. At Zone 10.
Yeah.
At Meadowlands. Like, that's where she is. So I found it like there was this hidden sort of competition to always be at a standard with the white girl.
Definitely.
And then now, obviously, okay, majority white boys at your school or the black boys at your school are just these like niggas that are just
waste of time.
We had a saying in like our high school, like the boys will always choose not to be rude, but an ugly white girl over a beautiful black girl.
Amen.
Okay. Let's not use words like ugly.
Okay.
Basic.
Yes.
Not attractive. A Becky. Yes. Exactly. We're gonna call her Becky.
But yeah, with regard to like competing, I felt that in high school it was a lot because it was like not even okay, which white boy likes which black girl or whatever, but it's like, okay, which car do you pull up in at school?
Yeah.
Do you get your nails done regularly?
But also generational wealth is a real thing.
Yeah,
so.
Literally. So it's you compete with like that wealth that
which you can't
we had to climb
with.
For.
You
maybe you're the first generation. Our fathers pay for masses in our family. Yes, their dads pay for their minimalistic homes, like the family of five, you know? So that is what I saw being a black girl at school where I was like, actually, it ain't the same. It ain't the same. I'm competing financially. I'm competing like, okay, cool. What do I do on weekends?
Where do you go on holiday?
Where do we go on holiday? Do we go to Mauritius every,
do
like...
Do you even go on holiday?
Yeah, my boy.
Where are you Christmas day?
Yeah, where do I Christmas... Which lunch, which restaurant do I go to? So wealth was the biggest thing that I saw as a black girl because it was like blown up in my face from when we switched from Samsung E250s to BlackBerry Curves to BlackBerry Bolds, et cetera, et cetera. So I felt like at the end of it, when I got to varsity, it's like, yo, I don't need this pressure to be competing with people like that. Like, I'm just going to be in my own lane and it's clean. It's fine. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I saw.
Okay. And up you were?
I would say like it is in the world. It's the same. Like, it's oppressive. Like, I remember this and like, I always think about it when I think about being in a majority white private school, but there was this instant, right, where the black girls had heard that this one white girl had obviously said that Nelson Mandela was a terrorist. So now we're like,
yeah, but
all right, like by those standards, I can't even understand you saying he's a terrorist, but like if that's your argument, then cool, but I'm not saying I'm understanding, but I remember being in maths class and this was in matric, like a lot of us were becoming a bit more woke than we are like right now, but like in matric, like now this white girl says Nelson Mandela's a terrorist, we're like, what do you mean? So we decided to have this discussion in maths class. So now everyone else, like most of the other pupils in the class are white, so when we're having this discussion, it seems like the side that says Nelson Mandela's oppressive, was a terrorist, is winning because like now we're fighting against.
And then you start looking crazy black girl.
And I will never forget, I'll never forget when the argument was coming to an end. It was just kind of like, oh, well, you know what, Apia, you should be grateful for Nelson Mandela because if it wasn't for him, you'd be sitting outside the class taking notes. That's what someone said in the class.
What?
And that's why I'm like, it's oppressive. Like, it actually is because, and when I think about it, I never like stood up and caused a scene or whatever. I was just like, ha ha, like, that's true. Like, that was literally
me. But when you
think
about it
now. I'm
like,
why would I ever let someone, like, say something like that? Like, in your head, do you not think, like, that is wrong, like, in any way, shape, or form? So I just think it is very, very, very oppressive, like, in those spaces, just because, we're a minority.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It is oppressive.
Country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I would say like being a black girl in a private school is definitely tiring. Like it's tiring on your soul, you know? And I think you realize it, as we had discussed earlier, once you're out of the institution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, out of it going into a new one, that's kind of the same.
But, yeah. But you're more anyways, open.
Okay, out of high school, like once you're over 18, you're like, oh, okay, this is what was happening. Or, you know, just realizing like the different microaggressions that, you know, all your teachers were white.
That's true. And the Zulu like, teacher was the only black teacher.
Yeah, the Zulu teacher was black or the sports coach was black. And it's like, you don't question that when you're in it. Yeah. When you're out of it, you think, okay, but why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the only adults that were of color that you'd see in your high school were the cleaners and the gardeners or the tea
ladies.
Very
true.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is that supposed to teach us? You know, like how are we meant to think about black people and black success and education when like those are realities at school? You know, it's like you really live in your own little bubble when you're at a private school.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's like when you get into the world, you're like, whoa.
But in music, like even music for me, luckily I was with a house full of older boys who were just proud to be black and whatever. But it's like, yo, getting to school, specifically primary school, where I'm like hip hop and it's like, who is like, don't stop.
Kesha.
TikTok.
That literally played like everywhere.
Might as well. Listen, Kesha was the tings. And it's like, I couldn't be like, yo, I wouldn't lie. 50 Cent is my boy.
And the only time they listened to hip hop was like, Rag City, bitch.
Yeah. Black and Yellow. Oh my gosh.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kendrick Lamar.
And it's like, dude, what are you doing?
Oh my God. It reminds me, what's this? It reminded me, went to Grahamstown once.
Yes.
And then what's this? This other white girl was singing, like rapping Kendrick's like part.
Dude,
like,
and they really and felt really great.
And all the guys were hyping. All the guys were like,
oh my gosh, she's so hot. She's so hot.
Guys, and it happens everywhere. Even with Selena Gomez and Kendall Jenner, like they posted a video of them, like, you know, like ASAP Rocky's, like, you know, they're busy dancing to his music or whatever.
All of a sudden
and
now.
And then they say one lyric to Drake's song, like, oh my God, like, you know, ha, in the camera. And then everyone's like on Twitter, like, wife material. I'm gonna do
but
this
when
now.
A black girl does it, it's just like hip-hop. Swipe.
Yeah.
It's like, the norm.
Oh, she can rap. Okay.
Okay. Cool. She listens to hip hop music.
Now it's a problem because she's one of the boys.
Sure. Yeah.
Dude, yeah. I really, you know, Fireflies.
That was my jam.
I hated that song.
That
is
the lowest you respect that song.
No, like, let me tell my truth. So I hated that song, guys. But 2010, guys, in St. Peter's College, the way they pumped that, so I liked. I love it now.
I can hear
a
fresh Millie rock to Fireflies.
But I hated that music, and I had to learn to like that shit because it's like, I can't relate to my peers if I don't like that music. I love it now. Trust, I love it. But at the time, I was like, fuck no.
You know what my problem is? Okay, I really like Nickelback. But like, back in the day, when I think of myself now, I'm like, <"That's> I'm like, if I listen to Nickelback, like the equivalent of Nickelback now, that is shameful. Like, that is actually shameful in the black community. But
yeah,
like,
imagine listening to Chainsmokers right now.
I was into Nickelback. I was like, these are my niggas. Like, yo.
Wow. No, it's true. It's true. I also had some bad. Do you guys know Tokyo Hotel?
Guys, remember we used to obsess over the script? Like, we were so in love.
Oh my God, I used to love the script. I even went to that concert and I was like, hello. And you know when you're like, hello, I forgot that one. Walking the street, something. Where they were walking
the man
on
can't be moved.
Yes, oh man.
Okay, Zanny, we don't know it. Okay. It's all right.
It's hectic.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask, so we've spoken a bit about like what our experience has been being a black girl in like a private school, which is obviously majority white in the whole South African context.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it like dealing with the whole privileged black identity? Do you know what I mean? I feel like that's a totally different category of black,
literally. Yeah, definitely.
Because I more so realized it, obviously, when I went to university.
Yeah.
Because when you go to uni, it's people who have come from every mm-hmm. background imaginable. Yeah. You know? And you're really having to interact with everybody. And it's not even like you'll go in there thinking that I'm better or I'm superior or anything like that. But there are certain things where you just stand out in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Like, I remember... I mean, besides, obviously, first of all, the way you speak mm-hmm. is always, oh, my
you
God.
You got that English
yeah.
accent.
Oh, you sound so white.
You speak so...
I didn't know white had a sound,
but
it's
so
all
right. Well, yeah. Ruby.
It's all right. Mm-hmm.
You speak so well.
One thing I always tell my friends, like, one thing that helped me, like, my parents wouldn't take, like, us coming back from school and, like... talking in English 24/7 at home. And I know that is a struggle with a lot of other mm-hmm. black girls, because it's like you speak, like your family speaks the language that, you know, whatever language it is. My family speaks Xhosa, and a lot of them would speak English in school, come home, still speak it, and then eventually you don't know how to speak it. Mm. And it's like, I understand how that could be, like, because if your main language 24/7 is English, it's very easy to just only speak English mm-hmm. and never be able to speak your mother tongue. So I feel like that was a struggle, like in terms of like languages, that was a struggle. Like, and for me, I grew up in Durban, so everyone spoke Zulu. So my parents would try to speak closer to me and teach me closer, but then there was always that confusion. Now I'm doing this English Zulu Xhosa mixture, and it never came together. But like, yeah, like my parents really did enforce that we spoke Xhosa at home. And like now I always tell my friends, I'm like, guys, that helped me so much, because anyone who knows me knows how much I love to speak Xhosa. Like now I don't even care whether you understand or not. Like, if you're my black friend or whatever, the fact that you understand like some other language, like you'll catch on, and I'll like translate. Like I will translate if you want me to, but that's like, I'm really proud to be able to speak that language mm-hmm. or understand other languages, because I'm like, I feel like, we are not losing that identity, but it is like, it's becoming like so much more watered down. Do you know what I'm saying?
I totally agree. I think it's such a difficult thing to discuss only because there's so much shame like associated with it. And okay, let me just explain what I'm saying. For example, I'm Zimbabwean, right?
Yeah.
So I'm Shona. So when I was younger, and every year I go to Zimbabwe, and when I was younger, there were times where I would be very fluent in Shona, do you know what I mean? Because I'd go for like a while to like my grandparents. I'd always be speaking it because everyone would be speaking Shona to me. You're in Zim, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one's going to be entertaining you like that. And I'd obviously been born in England, had started speaking English there. So I was that little black kid with like a British accent like
even.
Heavy, mm-hmm. heavy, heavy English accent. Then you're speaking Shona, you're obviously not really pronouncing things the way they should be pronounced, right? Then as I grew older, my dad never spoke Shona to me. Like, I think to this day, like, my dad has not spoken Shona to me. Whereas my mom always was like, no, we need to speak Shona at home. Like, this is your language. This is who you are, right? And then I think when I was in high school, I used to fight that. Mm. Like, it used to be like, oh, mom, like, why are you doing,
stop
like, why
it.
Are you doing this?
The white
oh,
kids
this is
don't
such
have
a mission
to do
kind
yeah.
of thing. Honestly, yeah. that's the approach I had to it. Which is really shameful. It really is when I look back at it now. And it's just like, it's so sad that I felt like that.
Yeah.
Because you felt so, I don't know, so like proud of yourself for speaking English a certain mm-hmm. way. And everyone always like praised you for how you spoke, mm-hmm. for being that black that spoke that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Then when you went home, it was like you're having to conform to a whole different identity. Like you're kind of like a different person.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
Like my own experience. Do you know what I mean? And I'm sure many people have had similar kind of experiences. Yeah. So now it's like I'm back to speaking Shona at home, but I'm obviously still a very English accent. That's
yeah.
just the truth of it. So now I'm like having to do Shona lessons, actually from like grade one books, having to know how to write and read and things like that. You know what I mean? Which I know that I'm still young. I'll obviously within the next 2 years be fluent and be able to read and write and everything. But it's so sad that it had to come at such a late point.
That's true.
You know? Obviously, better late than never, but some people never even have that
mm-hmm.
that moment to think, okay, now's the time. Yeah. And then sometimes if you have that moment too late, all the people that could be teaching you or doing it with you are gone.
But also,
and it's late.
Like, I personally, like, don't blame or feel like someone should feel the need to, like, okay, I feel like there's like a personal, like, responsibility you feel like to continue your heritage and your language. And it is, yeah, sure, like, there's erasure, but like, I've battled with, I don't speak my home language at all. Like, I don't.
What is your name?
So my dad's Nigerian, so he's Igbo, and I'm Xhosa from my mom's side.
Okay.
So also, with that, it's unique because now I have two different languages that I was never taught.
Yeah.
And I just kind of felt like for the longest time, a lot of people shamed me for not understanding vernac. I would go to like a KFC, or I'd go to like, I remember fish and chips vividly, like in Woodmead. They refused to speak to me in English because, they wanted me to know Zulu. Even Zulu's not even my culture, but they were almost forcing me to know a language and to know this thing. And it's like, it was never my fault. And it's like, I don't blame, like, not that I don't, like, if I didn't learn, I'm taking steps to learn it now, right? Because I feel like I want to.
Yes.
But if I didn't learn it, it was not, I can't help that I wasn't raised with my language, because at home, and you guys have a unique experience where your parents kind of like,
pressure
you to, to learn it. But for me at home, it was never, it was such a like nonchalant thing, like, oh, you know, they don't know it.
Mm.
And, I was like, how can I blame myself, or how can I feel so, like, how can I be so ashamed that I don't know it? Like, as if it was my decision to not know my own home language, you know, like, and I just feel like, so taking it back to like a whole holistic kind of thing, I think a lot of people get shamed for not knowing their home language and for not knowing the thingy, but it's like, no one chooses not to know, you know, even with you in high school, like you obviously had resistance, but you were taught at a younger age anyways, but you were taught, you know what I mean? And that was not just your decision anyways, like at the same time. So it's like, how can I look at someone who's 25 and doesn't want to do it? And it's like, I can't blame you. Like, I
guess it comes a responsibility with our parents, because I think our parents aren't like as woke as we are, because it's like, you know what?
It's a different generation.
Yeah, it's a different generation. They're like, it's almost like they think white is better. Yeah. So
that's the thing. So, like,
do you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to know English, and if English is the only thing you know, it's
fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Like,
that's
it's
why
fine.
We can't,
like, we're not gonna
we
fight
can't
it.
Blame our parents, because literally they're the first generation to actually make it. So obviously, like, when they were young, watch TV, all they saw were English shows. So then when they came to Joburg, it's just like, okay, it's just English people, it's white people, our kids have to know this language, you know, to fit in, to, in order to make like a name for themselves. So if like they didn't speak a language at home, they're just like, okay, as long as they know English, you know, they'll make it. My little Zanele, my little Ruby will definitely make it.
Yeah. And like, there's so many people like I know who struggle with picking up language in general. Now you're like at 25, where their brain's tired, guys. You know, after like you reach a certain age, like it's hard
just
to
block.
Like, I know it's a responsibility, but like, can you imagine like the torture of it, you know, just because, you know, responsibility. It's tricky to ask.
On my side, it was like, I had that family that like, okay, dad made it, brought the family up, because we moved a lot, like Free State, then Pretoria, then Cape Joburg. And it was a thing where like external fam was like, oh, okay, cheese girl. Okay.
Yeah. Ooh, right, every right, single right, holiday. Right.
So from the beginning, I grew up speaking Sotho.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a Sotho kid. And then, cause obviously like Free State, Pretoria, whatever, though, Tswana and Sotho were the languages. Then we moved to Joburg, and then it was like moved to another school, and it was like English Afrikaans. So it was like English was the first priority to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like family was like, you don't even know Xhosa. And obviously your dad is your, well, in Xhosa, like your dad is what you inherit. Like that's what you are, your Xhosa. And my mom is Tswana. So it was like confusing, but it was also like being bullied by your external family. Like, okay,
definitely,
cool. You go to this school, you live in this area. Like, you might as well, like, don't even bother, like, trying to speak vernac to us, because, like,
it's toast
anyway. Where you, does anyone even speak vernac that side? Like, it's just English people. So for me, it wasn't a thing of I didn't want to ever not speak. I always wanted to, but it was just confidence, lack of confidence to do that. So.
Especially when it's your own family bringing you down.
Literally. Yeah. And my mom would like try, bro, like throughout high school, she would try, but I was so, it like scarred me. Like the bullying was lit. So it scarred me not to even like bother, but like the way I understand both languages to the littest of the limits, it's like, why can't you speak, girl?
Girl, I'm in the same situation as you.
You know, when I got to varsity, it was a thing meeting at Pee Wee as well. This hun, like, literally speaks Xhosa in her sleep. She probably dreams in Xhosa, So it was just nice to have, like, you know, friends, even at AFTA, like, okay, in Cape Town, like, it's just Xhosa everywhere. Yeah. So you don't know anyone there, and then they just speak to you in Xhosa, and it's like, there's your opportunity to try. They don't know you. They don't, they're not gonna, like.
And I feel like it doesn't matter that much now. It's just like, we're speaking what we're speaking.
Definitely. Speaking what we're speaking.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I get so scared still. Like, I get the broken Xhosa.
She knows I speak broken Xhosa, Zulu, whatever I can, and it's like, it is what it, like, making, like, just taking the step to just be like, whatever, cause that is how you learn. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, that is how you learn. With my mom, she, like, she speaks Xhosa and then Tswana sometimes, and I'll, try here and there.
You know the difference. At least you know the difference.
So, doing and trying is, like, my journey now. Like, I'm like, okay, guys, you must understand, like, this is my history, but hey, like, I want to try. I want to be that guy speaking my languages. Mm-hmm. Like, I really do think it isn't something we should let go of, because at the end of the day, I don't want to make it deep.
We're going to be watered down. Like, if we're being honest.
It's like something we look back at, and it's like, if you don't try and inherit your heritage, if I can say, then it's sort of sticking to assimilating to Western culture.
Mm. Like, I know I definitely want to pass a language besides English down to my kids.
Definitely.
Like, that's me as well. Like, to a point that I think, like, at some stage, like, my kids are going to have to live with my parents just so they can grasp that thing. And then, like, I come in, like, being able to speak with them. But, like, it's just, I just feel like Vanak to me, it just means a lot, like, for me personally. Like, when I got older, I realized, like, being able to speak Vanak, or at least understanding it, is just, like, it's so nice.
Mm. And it's so interesting because
it's never too late, too.
No, it is never too late. Of course, languages are harder to grasp when you're older, but hard doesn't mean it's impossible, you know?
Yeah.
And I know my mom always tells me, she's like, you will regret this if you don't do this now.
Definitely.
True.
And I know I will regret it if I don't do it now.
But
do you know what I mean?
At least you're realizing it now. Because some people only realize it when they're like 35 or something. So you still have the opportunities. You still live with your mom. You're taking lessons. There's the internet. We're in this new generation. But also the internet. It's hard to like learn.
You know,
from
Twitter
the internet
translates Zulu to Indonesian. Like,
what?
Yeah.
What?
Like, you're literally via like, Bing. Yes. It says they translate to Indonesian.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Cool.
It's so interesting that just in like a short space of thinking back to how experiences have been, we've gone from music to like how we were treated to teachers to language. True. And it really just, it takes over your whole life. Do you know what I mean? Being in like a majority white space just consumes your whole life. Like everything about you changes, because even your appearance changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's difficult because obviously black women's bodies are very different to white women's bodies. So, and a lot of us are, besides even like, I'm not even going to talk about fat or whatever, bigger boned. Genuinely, your build is bigger boned. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that actually reminds me when I used to play water polo in grade 10 and 9. And then the costume on the white girls, it would just, you know, like it will cover the bum, everything. Always. And then with me,
like you're wearing a thong.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It looks like my ass is already huge. Now I look like I got this type of panty here with the little twape, but it's not even a twape going on. It just sits like that. Then you got my big, thick ass thighs there hanging. And you could see that some of them were just so confused with my body. Yeah. They were just like looking like,
but one thing I still have noticed is that, like, major fashion houses have still, like, the measurements that they create the clothes by are still for white bodies.
Definitely.
Like, if I can tell you now, like, if you buy, the only thing that I can say, and not even, like, high-waisted jeans, for instance.
Oh, high-waisted jeans are not high-waisted jeans.
It's just like a normal jean. Do you know what I'm saying? But, like, it's small things you can tell, like, these were not, the measurements are not made for like black women's bodies. Like they just aren't. And I'm starting to think, like, you know, the sizing, like 32, 34, whatever, and then your hip has to be this big and whatever. That's measured to a white woman's body. Definitely. And that's why it's still, exactly. And that's why it's still like, today, like, when I buy something, for instance, I buy a skirt, I'm always like, okay, my waist is way too small, but my bum's way too big. Now the waist is hanging, but it's meant to sit at my waist, like, properly. Now I have to go get it tailored. Do you know what I'm saying?
You know,
like,
the worst part about a skirt is that they never give you enough material for the bums, right?
Yeah, oh my
so
now God.
So you have to take a big size.
Like, you're wearing like a clepezana. Like, you feel like you're wearing like, just like a, and then the front is nice and respectful. Like, it's cute.
And then at the back, it says high rise.
It's saying elevate, limited, limited, limited.
And it's even in school uniform. Like, in school, you feel like you know, they always go around with
that. Literally, that's what my skirt meter rule.
They're like, your skirt's too short. It's like, girl, please look at my knees.
That's
there.
The thing. Yeah. And they would not understand.
They won't. And they, like, that's the one thing that irks me about designing for black bodies is that, like, you can just tell by the skirts. There's no material at the back.
Even like at school, there's like nothing. The pants. I loved wearing pants at school. But I had to buy the guy pants because, wow,
like
the ladies' pants were just shaping me some other type of way.
Yeah.
They were like really, really, really tight. I wasn't even comfortable. Whereby the guy pants, you know, it's still like
more room.
Yes, there's more room. But obviously, there's sometimes where I just want to, like, not, I know it's cool, but you still want to show the shape of your body.
Yes.
Now you look like you just this blah.
Yeah,
like
the worst thing about our school is like you couldn't buy boy pants at the school shop.
Did you?
And the girls' pants were designed to be like tight in the body, no pockets, no nothing. So now if you wanted like proper
you'd have to
pants,
just
you
go
have to go to
Woolworths.
They won't sell you the boy pants, even if the girl pants don't look good on you. It's so sad.
Yeah, we had skirts. Fortunate. I mean, you know what I'm saying. My school said multi-form. They said buy any black, but also Crawford. Shout out. They actually, like, they said be your own person in your uniform. Like, at least we could.
That was very Gossip Girl.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
And you could even, like, you could, like things, you know, you could buy, like, a pencil skirt from anywhere.
Babs did this regularly.
Yeah. You know, I just wear a golf shirt with your skirt.
Literally, that's what I appreciate. But in primary school, we wore jeans and a skirt and this like awkward dress. And that was like, I hated wearing and I liked wearing shorts. And these jean shorts, it's like this hard jean
material
where now it like grips your thighs and it's just,
it's a lot. Now you can't move.
And they're green. Also, so it's just, it doesn't look right.
Also, the sports uniform.
No,
guys.
Disaster.
Disaster. Oh, the shorts would ride up and give you like a camel toe thing.
Yep.
And it only happens to thick, bad girls.
Even the tracksuit. How is a tracksuit giving you this other
topic? Yeah.
A tracksuit. A tracksuit. The most simple thing to make. A tracksuit.
No, it's crimes. It never worked. All crimes, guys. No.
So the uniform was actually against us.
Yep.
The uniform was an oppressor.
No, shout out to
fashion is
high
not
school,
is not
though.
For us here.
We could flourish. I won't lie.
Honestly, who would be looking fleeky at school? I'm just saying.
In high school, we said fleek boys.
No, what
did we?
Yeah,
I probably wasn't that cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just very interesting. Like. Yeah, if I think back to uniform, but I guess it's different for different schools. Yeah. I know I had Babs and I had a very unique experience because Crawford was very chill in
yeah.
terms
Lows
of.
Ours wasn't also that bad. It was just like dresses. Really? Like, yeah, that was that.
Nah, ours was bad.
But I guess for some, like, yeah. I wasn't like the bigger kind of black girl, but for some black girls, it was a problem because it was like definitely. A dress. Now I have a bum that's this big.
Yeah.
And now it's meant to be a certain length. So I guess for some girls, it really was a problem, but generally, nah.
Yeah, I think the only thing I struggled with was like golf tops, because when you have big breasts, there's always that one button.
It's not allowing.
Yeah, like we had the button.
It's not fighting.
Allowing. Yeah.
Fight, like the buttons are fighting, like they really don't want to
be together.
But then if you get the bigger size, then the whole top is baggy. And you're like,
what must happen? The extra money, guys, it's expensive to be, you know, big, bigger body.
It actually, it really is, but that's another topic. Okay, so back to the original question I asked. How do you navigate the whole black, privileged black, like, stigma, right? So once you get to university, it's kind of like, so my first experience was that I think when I went to University of Cape Town, and I'd never felt more black, or like more, more, let me say, a black who is a foreigner. Like, I'd never felt so foreign in a space until I got to university, right? Then from there, it was like the residence I was in. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of South Africans, people are speaking their vernac. And then when you're wanting to make friends with people, they wouldn't really want to interact with you in English. But it's like, I really don't know you, like, the language that you speak. So they only wanting to associate with people who speak, you know, the same language of with them. So it's like there's certain girls that you kind of like stay away from, because you know that this the group clique. Are the Zulu girls, or these are the Tswana girls, or whatever it is. Like, you can't even like be a friend, you know?
I think the one thing with me is that, so in first year, I remember this one girl, and it's like that whole, because I think black people, we also segregate within ourselves. Like, it's like the rich black kids and then the middle class and then the poor. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so I was in this tut with this one girl. Her name was Blessing. And it was like, you could just tell, like, we are both black, but we're from two different worlds and stuff like that. And like, one thing that just stuck out to me was that, like, I would really want to hang out with someone like her, but like, at the same time, she would never feel comfortable coming into my spaces because, you know, like, the conversation is different. Like, like, she won't feel comfortable because it's like, okay, I don't have what they have. You know what I'm saying? So we do segregate within, like, the black community. And I think that is a big problem. That is a huge, huge problem.
Yeah. But do you think we segregate, how do I say, do you think you put yourself into those categories, or they presuppose, like?
I think we fall into them, but not like accidentally. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I wouldn't say it's like completely calculated for some people. Like, I'm just going to hang with people, you know, who are, you know, as blessed as me or whatever. But it's kind of like we fall into those, like, certain groups of people. But I think that in itself is a problem, because that means like we haven't created the space for like other people to feel comfortable enough. Like, as black people, we think that it kind of is like the better black mentality that we still have from our private schools and whatever. We still kind of have that, because white people, like, they do tell you, okay, because you are more blessed and whatever, you are the better black. You're not as poor as the others. You know what I'm saying? Your hair is a certain way. You keep your hair neat. You whatever, whatever. So when we go into like out into the real world, I still think we have those. I don't even know how to explain it, but we still have that thing of like the better blacks, because we'll always gravitate towards people
who are like you,
who are like us, and also, that's a problem.
I think we're also just comfortable in our spaces. I also don't think it's like even a matter of like, yes, sure, like you will relate to people who have, who are as affluent as you are or, you know, as blessed as you are. But at the same time, like it's easier to just kind of just go with that flow than to really challenge yourself and open yourself up to new experiences.
No, because people are really shallow also.
I know,
people are very shallow.
It's not like, for example, your friend in class or whatever. Yeah. Right? Like, let's say she didn't have to be part of your friendship group, right? Yeah. But like, how about make like a thing of just as an example, like yeah. challenging to kind of make a space for you guys to
no
be.
She like I always like when I came into class mm-hmm. like we always used to sit together and I'd always want her to like make her feel like, you know what, like we girls or whatever mm-hmm. but it is like that thing like,
and on her
and
end
it's
challenging
small things
yourself
guys
as well,
it's small things like I come into class dressed a certain way mm. she comes into class dressed another way. Like
you,
you know what I'm saying
phone.
I take out a certain phone she you know what I'm saying or laptop or whatever and it's those like it's those little things it's like okay I personally would feel if I was in her position yeah. I would just you know remove myself because I feel like I can't like fit into that space because yeah. like that whole thing of like competing and like that bitter black mentality mm-hmm. is really what is segregating.
But like, to
black
that,
people.
Like as well, like it's not only us challenging ourselves, like people need to challenge, like she needs to also challenge herself to not feel as uncomfortable because anyways,
no,
everyone's okay, but let's think about this. Everyone's in varsity to kind of elevate and uplift. And
yeah.
at some point, if life goes successful for them, they're going to be in spaces where people are blessed. Like, yes, so I feel like it's a matter of like we all like there are barriers and there are things that will make you uncomfortable. I know, like I have even more affluent friends that I am than myself,
yeah.
and like even chilling with them, it feels like I kind of feel like I'm competing. Or I kind of feel like I don't have that. I don't,
yeah.
have, but like it's that thing where you have to get out of your head because a friendship is not based on that. So even on her side,
but it's not that easy. Do you get what I'm saying?
I know people
are
easy.
So shallow. I'm telling
but
you, people are so shallow. But then it doesn't become the person in the, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the person in the lower, I don't want to say mm-hmm. lower, but like that person, it doesn't become their job to, you know, try to make themselves fit in. We have problems ourselves.
That's the thing.
Like,
yeah.
why do we segregate within ourselves, based on how?
No, that's true.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Also,
it's not,
privileged blacks, we tend to, when we see someone who is from a different class, look at them at a certain way. We tend to, oh, okay, I can get this. I can get an iPhone. Oh, shame. They can't get this. And like, it's also this whole thing of like, sorry. I've got lost for words. It's just, what's this? It's hard to go to someone who's not in the same class as you.
Yeah.
Because you guys have different stories.
Yeah.
You have different challenges. So now let's say they don't have money. You have money. When they come to you, be like, yo, girl, I really don't have money. The struggle.
So what's the solution
now,
though?
Must you like go ahead and be like, and lie? Or must you?
But what's the
solution? You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to think of, like, maybe I you might know, be wrong,
yeah.
but I'm trying to think of like, how do we, you
but
know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, for me, the same way, I don't feel like it's my job mm-hmm. to go and educate white people about black people. I don't think it's
yes.
their job to try
yes.
and fit in with another black person because I feel like the problem is with the more affluent black people than
mm-hmm.
it is with the poor black people. Do you know
I
what I'm saying?
The
problem is
you.
There. So I don't think that... like they need to like shift their mentality and think, oh, but like a friendship is based on this. People are shallow, and that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like black people
mm-hmm.
who are more affluent are shallow, and that is the problem. And that's why I'm like, as black people, we need to fix that because it feels like we are segregated within ourselves. Do you
definitely.
Feel me?
Definitely. No, I understand what you're saying. I totally agree.
I feel like there's so many ways to look at it though. Mm. Like you can say yes, the more affluent black person is shallow, right?
Yeah.
And might have a sort of superiority
complex
because
yeah.
of their upbringing. But at the same time, it's like, because there's such a wide disparity between
yeah,
rich blacks
that's true.
And poor blacks, I personally don't believe in middle class because people are so deep
yeah,
in debt.
Yeah.
But anyways,
yeah.
rich blacks and poor blacks, it's like, that society that makes us that way.
Yeah.
That makes us think
mm-hmm.
that way.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? It makes us think that when white people interact with you a certain way, that you're better than someone else who cannot interact with a white person on that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we equate some level of whiteness, unfortunately, to a certain level of success.
That's true.
I don't think it's a certain level of whiteness. I think it's that you're brought up in a household where your parents are like, don't let them nyatsa you. Like that complex, like don't let them tell you, you cannot because we've built up this.
Mm.
So you step out into a world where you're like, okay, cool. Like I'm not going to let, okay. After leaving the high school mentality of trying to fit in, you're like, no, listen, I'm leaving that mentality. Like, okay, cool. This is what my parents stood for. This is where I am at. This is my realm of where I'm at, like in life, my financial lane, et cetera, et cetera. So I think what rubs off on within the black community is that everyone is trying to be like,
the one who made it.
I have this.
Yeah, the one like, who made it.
You know, yeah. So you rub that, like you rub that thing off everyone else. And it's like you miss opportunities or you make impressions which aren't real or which like prohibit you from being friends with whoever and whoever. Mm. I thought that I could maintain a friendship where I could be with someone. X. I thought I could have a friendship with X. And it was like in that friendship. Also, okay, coming from a private school, you think you have the mentality that everyone's in the same lane as you, and then
and that's a problem.
You step into high school, no one's in. You get black people that are living here, up there, and down there, and wherever, wherever. So, in this relationship that I had, I was like, okay, cool, like we're not gonna make this deep, but financially. It is deep because it's like the way you think. Like, unfortunately, hey, you're wired to think like, okay, cool. Are you hungry? Let's go there. And it's like, nah, bro.
Money.
Can't afford it like that.
It's and
like,
how am I getting there? And what am I wearing?
It's like,
to go
no.
There?
And
it's like, oh, we just ordered an Uber.
What? Like, yeah. No. Like, no.
The next person can't
so
do
that. So it's
like,
how do you not fall into relationships that become a pity party? Like Zani was saying.
Yeah.
Like, not that you think, oh, shame. Like, shame. She can't. But it's like, how do you not fall into a position where you're not overcompensating to maintain some genuine
That's
friendship
true.
When you know that these are the standards? And I don't think that we try and segregate ourselves with people that aren't able to do A, B, and C. I just think that mentality-wise and that thing of just rubbing off, like, this is where you're trying to also, this resentment against white people and what they have. And it's like, this is what I have. Yeah, this and that. You have that. And then you come to a genuine black person who isn't on this level with you. How do you maintain?
Navigate.
How do you navigate? And I see that especially like in varsity when the thing is like, let's go party. Let's go buy bottles. You in groups of friends.
Yeah, I distance
in
myself
those,
from those friends.
In those groups of friends, you can see like everyone expects Mang Mang to cop out this much of money and Mang Mang to cop out this. And it's like, yo. And people now, like you said, fall into debt. Now
you're borrowing from whoever.
You
doing
know what?
To get money.
One thing my mom has always said is like, Subanent is your end. And that just means like, I don't know how to translated, but it's like, don't want things that are way beyond your means, basically. And it's like, also as black people, you have to have that thing because you're gonna see, because we're in such an awkward position where some people are making it and then there's still some people lagging behind. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's so easy to fall into that trap where you're like, yo, like I really want that thing. Mm. And it's like, you still have to have that mentality, like you shouldn't be like want things that are beyond your own means. Mm. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I get you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very difficult to discuss because
tricky.
It's like, it's so ingrained in society. It's ingrained in institutions. It's just the way we think. It's the way we're raised.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, if it's the way you've been thinking for 18 years, then now you go out into the world and you're trying to like... Now it's like, no, you need to think this way. Yeah. It's very difficult. And I think like for me, I know in first year, when I went into res, as I was saying, and obviously majority of the res were South African black people. You know,
yeah.
It's a university in South Africa. So... Whereas when I went to private school, a lot of the blacks who were doing quite well were foreigners. Exactly. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. it was a different demographic.
From school, it was mostly Zimbabweans and Nigerians.
Yeah. It was mainly foreigners. Yeah. So now when you're in a space where it really is majority black South Africans, obviously it's your country. You know what I mean? But this is now who I'm interacting with. And it's like, I remember I'd run for house comm in first year and I went up for it and I did my speech and you know like I prepared my speech really well because I enjoy that stuff and like I'd laminated my poster and designed it well and blah 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 and then I didn't get it right and in the end I remember speaking to this one girl who was like you know you're actually pretty cool she had said to me right she's black South.
Why would
like,
I not be
yeah she's like oh you're actually pretty cool like pretty like down to earth. And I'm like, okay, why? What did you think of me? She's like, yeah, I remember when you were running for House Comm. Yeah, like a lot of my friends and I, like we sat in a room and like we decided not to vote for you because like, you know, your speech was like your English was just a lot. And, you know, your poster was laminated.
Hi, Bo.
Okay, but Funeka Itini.
And I was like, oh, okay. But yeah. That's the way so many people think. And that's the truth. Do you know what I mean? No, really. The fact that my poster was the only one that was laminated or whatever, or I'd presented in a certain way.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like as like if
in
I'm...
a plastic poster.
I paid the extra R2 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's as if you're trying to be better, but that's the way you are.
Yeah.
That's just the way you present yourself. That's the way you speak. That's the way you do things. That's the way you execute. That's the way you work. That's your work ethic, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because that's the way you've been trained to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we consolidate you're older?
I think that's just within black females. I don't know why, because we put on social media like, go girl, you get it.
But it's the competition.
But it's like hate. It's so much hate. It's really like black girls actually don't want to see black girls flourish. Like actually. That's like, I don't like it.
Yeah. I feel like on social media, you want to front as if you are, but yeah, there's something within black girls. Some, it's like, you're not truly
bitter,
happy.
There's some bitter,
you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's so interesting.
I don't get it. I remember my mother said a speech to me.
Oh, yeah.
And she was basically like, if you think, you know, we'll be talking and we'll see some pretty black girl in the mall, whatever. And she's like, tell her. Like, I'll be like, yo, she's pretty. Like, whatever, whatever. And she'll be like, go to her and tell her she's like pretty or whatever. And it's like, in our own community as black females, we don't, it's social media that tries to like disguise this or put up this front that we actually go girl, comment on each other's pictures like, yo, flourish, flourish. But like in reality, it's like you walk past this black hun and she's looking at you like that. And it's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why must we be like that? Why can't we actually uplift each other? Like for real, for real. Academically, like motivate each other in each other's careers or whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
Why can't we actually be like, yeah?
What do you think we're it is? Sure.
I just feel like we can't blame the like black girl being jealous or saying or like wanting another black girl to, you know, go down, not be as high as them, because that's what we taught. We like with private schools, there was always the guys, oh no, the only black chick I would date was this number one, what. The rest
it was
of
actually
this.
Babs, guys.
Yes,
it was
Babs.
I'm not even
they
lying.
Literally
it was
said,
Babs.
It was
Babs.
Was, there was this white guy that we all loved who was like, no, I would not, I don't do black girls, but Babs. Oh, yo, she
Isn't
was so.
At your school?
Yes, at our school.
Guys, Babs was popular. We all knew her.
Popping.
She was popping. Guys, the white guy.
Hey, Vanilla Killer.
She was a Vanilla Killer. St. Peter's Vanilla Killer 101.
All of them.
St. Peter's
I don't like black girls, but Babs, you seen her body.
Babs is that. Wow.
I would do. It's a shame.
Don't worry. At my school, Babs was also that girl.
No, but I do want to say, and it's going to make me feel very, very uncomfortable.
Yes.
But in our social climate, it's very easy to say, oh, lift everybody up or bring down the ladder is not going to ruin what your spoils or whatever. Guess what? In a white supremacist society, when there's only room for one black girl, one Halle Berry, and now things are changing, sure. But when there's only room for one black girl, excuse me, it is a competition.
Yes.
It is. And it's going to make us feel uncomfortable. No. Let me be honest.
Listen.
No, hold on. Like, I'm going to be honest here, right? Spaces are opening up for black girls, and that's true. I mean, I'm so happy. For example, Issa Rae now has like an HBO show. Like, she's growing. Ava DuVernay, like, she's doing big things. Like, the spaces are opening, right? But let's talk about prior to, like, let's talk about 2014 or maybe even 2012 Hollywood or 2012.
There was only one Oprah. You can't blame the other black girls for being jealous.
And
this is just the entertainment industry. Yeah. Let's talk about other industries that we don't see, other social capitals that we don't see. Like, at the end of the day, first of all, competition is a female thing. Like, but like, let's not, you know, take the burden onto our shoulders as black women only. But at the end of the day, like, there are some spaces still to this day, and this is why I feel like it's so hard to shake. I'm not trying to say it's okay, it's a good thing, but it's hard to shake because there are still things that if you lift somebody up, you're gonna be eating out of your own plate, because that's how our society is structured right now.
Yeah,
you know, and it's annoying, it sucks, it's fucky. Yeah. I hate it, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to sometimes look at it and play it smart and understand. And I'm a kind of person who I always uplift women. I always, like, if I see someone beautiful, like, if I feel courageous, because some days I do feel self-conscious, I'll always be like, you're beautiful, or you took my breath away, or you this. I don't hold back. I always do that. But I also am not naive to the fact that there are moments in life where I'm going to have to put myself above another girl to succeed, because that's how the social capital works at this point.
Yeah,
let's change it. But at this point, yes.
Yeah, cool. I get what you mean.
I feel like Chioma was just like the mother of the group.
Yeah,
she was
just like, listen.
No,
listen,
she's let's like, be real now. Yeah, like,
it's not all unicorns and cupcakes
and rainbows. It's actually not.
This is what happened. But right. That is the way things are structured right now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean we shouldn't have these conversations.
Agreed.
And think of a way forward to how do we change the society so that, you know, we are happy and comfortable as black women in the society that we live in.
Yeah.
Of course, we should have those conversations, but obviously it isn't happening right now, which is why this is a topic to discuss.
But even like right now, it's still a competition. Mm. Like, yes, black girls are coming up and all of that, but how many are they? They still this huge
and then there's
gap.
The colorism. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about it.
Hey. So, like, there's always going to be jealousy within the female group. There's
so
always going to be
of the
fakeness.
Conversation.
Go.
Like, not bored. It's like a, we should stop talking about bored. Like, it's just so tiring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, actually, I always wondered in high school. You know, like when the whole yellow bone thing came in.
Yeah, and it was deep.
What's the opposite
was
of yellow bone?
Red bone.
Red bone.
So you know, it was Lil Wayne who came in as our reps.
Yes,
man.
And he's done. What
he
is
was
he
like,
doing?
You know what I'm saying? And then he started introducing yellow bones and red bones, and we're like, yeah, I'm not the yellow bone.
What's
you know
a
what
red
I'm saying?
Bone?
Nah,
darker. If you're not, if you're not yellow bone.
So, so my bones are red.
I don't know. Like, I actually don't know what red bone meant, if I'm being honest. But yeah, when that thing came out,
yeah,
became tense.
I never knew it was Lil Wayne. I thought it was a white person who made that up. But
no, it was the rappers. Like, they used to throw it. They used to throw it in Trey Songz. Even Trey Songz.
Guys, our own people.
Be your niggas.
Be your niggas.
That's what they were saying. Like, black guys, they don't. We will never move forward as a whole, as a black community.
Can we really talk about, like, black guys just in high school?
Oh, problem.
Can we talk about. Because I got a lot to say.
Let's receipt it.
Okay, we can talk about black guys on, like, for 2 minutes, guys, okay. Because while we've been chatting.
This is a topic.
Can I wrap it up?
So
in high school, now you guys know, like, the really, like, I wouldn't say the good, like, boys schools in high school were, but they were like mainly they were based in Durban, like those boarding schools, and those boarding schools had a lot of like
racial problems. Mm-hmm. So obviously the guys that went there now also have that better black mentality. You know, they have the relaxed comb-overs and whatever. And they really tried to be white. So they wanted to date white girls. Yeah. Now,
or
I
only
remember,
like one type of black girl.
Or yes. one type of, yes.
Like colored with very curly hair.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But, so when I was in high school,
tell us.
These guys started this, and it was like Twitter was still like a fresh new thing. Mm. So these guys started this Twitter account called Vanilla Killers.
Mm? Wow.
Wow.
And their Twitter account, they just went on to bash black girls, saying they only want white girls, and these are the hottest like white girls here, and like genuinely that's all they did. Like, black girls, we don't want them, we are vanilla killers, these are the top white girls. They even like named it. There was one girl who really liked to date black guys, like all her high school life she just dated black guys. They even said that thing like, this girl doesn't count if you date her because Vele, she's like another black girl because she dates like, she's only been dating white, black guys.
That doesn't even make sense.
You know what I'm saying?
No, our high school, like our black guys threw us under the bus.
They had a list
of hottest to like not.
Wow.
They would always like, they'd always bash the black girls. We were never seen as like desirable.
We weren't even women. Like,
yeah, we weren't. Whenever we complained, or like, you know, it's one of those things where like our men just don't stand up for us.
Yeah.
They were always like, it's just one. And the thing is, I do sympathize because they were also in it. Like, they were also like not woke, basically. They were doing what they needed
they
to
were
do.
Daft.
You know? But like, yeah.
Ah, no, shame.
So like,
I can't.
Every single, like, I swear some of it even felt worse because it came from our black guys, you know, the black guys that had the comb-overs, the black guys that always crush on the white girls. Like, you could never, like, only like maybe towards the end of high school did you find them actually opening themselves up to
like one or two.
Yeah. Liking us. But it was, their crushes were always like the Jessicas and the Shannons and the, you know,
Michelle's.
Guys, good bird.
Literally. And then we had like black boys who would, you know, hustle and bustle to fit in like the white boy, the white
image.
Boy groups, right? Our school is basically run by Jews, and you know, the Jew squad and whatever would be like the cool boys, and all of the black boys would just like
try and squeeze in there.
And then if you're not like mates with those Jewish boys, white female friends, then peace out.
Hi guys, it's hard.
It's rough. But hey, like, you know,
we
out here.
We flourish.
We're trying to flourish now.
Yeah,
we flourish. Like, it doesn't matter.
Look at us now.
Look at me now.
Looking like licks.
Okay, well, to wrap it up, because while we've been chatting,
you can't actually finish this conversation.
You actually can't finish this conversation. Like, I feel like we need to do another one because there's so much
this
to discuss.
This needs to be a 3-hour show.
Yes,
okay,
boy.
This particular next
conversation.
Time,
3 hours. Don't worry, I'll invite you guys.
Listen.
Okay, well, I want to thank everyone for being
thank
in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
And I hope everyone has enjoyed this podcast and listening to our different opinions. So
thank you for listening, guys.
Peace out.
Goodbye for now.
Bye.
See you later.
This is CliffCentral.com.